This month, The Spectator becomes the first magazine in history to print 10,000 issues, and we'd like to celebrate with you. Subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a bottle of commemorative Spectator gin, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/celebrate.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily politics podcast. The Prime Minister remains in intensive care, but he has not needed to use a ventilator as of yet. And we have had an update today from his de facto deputy, Dominic Raab, at the daily government press conference. James, what was the key takeaway message from the First Secretary of State?
So on Boris Johnson's health, the message was that the Prime Minister, as you said, is not on a ventilator, hasn't required invasive procedures to get more oxygen into his system. And I think that, given where things were last night, I think that is a fairly hopeful state of affairs. I thought the rest of the press conference, there was a lot of attention on what Dominic Raab is or isn't able to do in this kind of deputising role. He was emphasising cabinet collective responsibility and that they have a clear idea of what Boris Johnson's plans are, and so we need to kind of get on with implementing them. And that is true in certain respects, but there is one thing where the government has not yet formulated a plan, which is how to ease the lockdown, how to ease these compulsory social distancing restrictions. Now, when you think about that decision, that is about as difficult and as consequential a decision as any Prime Minister can take. There are so many trade-offs involved in that decision about people's health, both in terms of the spread of the virus, but also, as Chris Whitty was pointing out, the negative effects of the lockdown on other aspects of people's health, on other aspects of the NHS, in terms of, you know, childhood vaccinations and such, and also, obviously, the big question of the economy. And I think it was clear from Dominic Raab's kind of reluctance to engage on that question that ultimately this is such a big question, it is going to have to wait for Boris Johnson's return to work, because how this is done could be the defining moment of his government. And I don't think there is going to be one view on this question around the cabinet table at the beginning of discussion, certainly. So I think that is probably going to have to wait for Boris Johnson's return to work.
So Fraser, watching that press conference and hearing the messaging today, are we effectively in a holding pattern, so to speak, on coronavirus and the government's response while Boris Johnson is in hospital and recovering, aside from the day-to-day running?
Well, yes, we are in a pause, but I'm afraid to say I can't really see what would change even if he was in number 10. Right now, the big question is, how far has the coronavirus spread? Has it spread to 3% of the country or 60%? The experts, the modellers, don't know. And we can't find an answer to this because we can't get the antibody tests. So until there is some serious change in situation, either in Britain or abroad, I can't really see lockdown being reversed or being ended. We know the government's doing all it can to get proper tests, and I'm not quite sure what the big decision would be that Boris Johnson would make if he was in number 10 and not in intensive care.
And James, when it comes to a potential way out, one of the things that came up in terms of the press conference was how the UK is comparing with other countries and the trajectory in terms of the death toll. Now, we know that it is hard to have a like-by-like comparison in terms of death tolls in various countries because in part how they are recorded. But one of the things that came out was how Germany right now seems to be on a lower trajectory. Here's what Chris Whitty had to say about that.
Well, I think that the one thing I'd add to that is we all know that Germany got ahead in terms of its ability to do testing for the virus, and there's a lot to learn from that, and we've been trying to learn the lessons from that.
James, do you think this is going to become an increasing problem for the UK government, the fact that Germany, which has had mass testing, and the UK, which is struggling and been heavily criticised for mass testing, appear right now to be on two different trajectories when it comes to fatalities?
Yeah, I think if you look at the European curves at the moment, nearly all the other European, Spain is a little bit higher up, but the UK, France and Italy are all roughly banded in the same place, and Germany is clearly currently on a lower trajectory. Now, I thought Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance's answers on this were absolutely fascinating, and I really hope that, you know, there is, when there is an inquiry into this, when the country is through it and there is an inquiry into what can be learned, I thought they both said things that the inquiry should concentrate on. Whitty was emphasising how the fact that Germany got testing so quickly and so fast has helped it get on that lower trajectory. And Vallance was also talking about structural differences in the way that German healthcare is organised compared to the UK, and suggested that that might have helped. I think, you know, there is obviously things here to look at when we assess whether the UK could have done better in terms of its response to this virus.
And of course, the big difference between Germany and Britain is we have a centralised national health service, whereas German health service is split between something like 400 public health officials, is run by councils. They don't need to get the call from the health ministry to say they can go ahead with testing. They can do it on their own initiative. So we are all, in this country anyway, amazed at how many tests German health authorities manage to get their hands on, and the way that they do seem to have, through smart testing, reduced the fatality rate. And it was really quite interesting, actually, to see Patrick Vallance refer to the structures, because the structures, they mean, to me, quite obviously, whether you ought to have the biggest organisation in the world, which is the NHS, or whether it's better to trust those doctors more and the local health authorities more and give them more autonomy, which the Germans do. It's been one of the biggest issues in British politics for 40 or 50 years now, whether it basically does make sense to have the NHS governed in a hierarchy. I've always tended to have slightly more belief in the inability of individual health services to manage themselves. That's been the German way. It's always seemed to make more sense to me. Interesting that Patrick Vallance is opening up this question now.
And James, away from the press conference, have we had any more details today in terms of how the government is exactly going to function while Boris Johnson is away? We don't expect him to return in the immediate future. So although Dominic Raab is the de facto deputy, we've heard today, for example, that should Dominic Raab fall ill, and some claim they have seen him coughing, it's Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, who steps in. But how exactly is the power being shared? Because it's not as though Dominic Raab has the same power as a prime minister.
No, and I think that's why Dominic Raab is emphasising that he is going to kind of rely on cabinet collective responsibility and collective decision making, and that most of what they will be doing is implementing things that Boris Johnson has already outlined. I think obviously your position as someone who is deputising for somebody else is obviously less authoritative than if you were the person yourself. I mean, I think anyone who works in an organisation knows that that is true. I think that because Dominic Raab is First Secretary of State, I don't really think it could have been anybody else but him who took charge in this circumstance. You know, Boris Johnson designated Dominic Raab as First Secretary of State. You know, that is traditionally the person who is next in line if the PM is incapacitated. And so I think any other solution would be far muckier and messier. I think, as we talked about with the lockdown, I think when things get difficult, depending on how long Boris Johnson is off for, is when the government has to take decisions on something where Boris Johnson has not left behind a kind of clear plan or a clear set of instructions.
And finally, Fraser, what's the role of Labour and opposition in all of this? Because since the news broke that Boris Johnson had been admitted to intensive care, we've seen an outpouring of support, well wishes for the Prime Minister. We've also heard previously that Keir Starmer wants to be a different type of opposition figure. He wants to be constructive where he can. So are we going to start to see Labour working quite closely with the Conservatives, or is that perhaps a little bit further than reality?
Well, opposition leaders, I think, quite often start saying they want to change the tone of politics. Even Jeremy Corbyn said he wanted a kindler, gentler politics. It didn't quite work out that way. But I also think that there are times in the national life where oppositions behave in different ways. When you're facing a common enemy, whether it be a pandemic or whether you're in war, you will see the government approval ratings go up. They've gone up in Britain, they've gone up right around the Western world. you also see oppositions being more supportive of the government, more sympathetic towards the government, and we're seeing that now. But this tends not to last. I mean, there is a reason in our system why the government and the opposition are two swords' lengths apart from each other in the House of Commons. That's because Her Majesty's opposition has got a very important job, and that is to oppose the government as strongly as it possibly can. But of course, to everything there is a season. There will be times for the opposition to go for the government's jugular, but there will also be times for the opposition to lend a supportive hand to the government. And I thought that Jonathan Ashworth, the Shadow's Health Secretary, spoke very eloquently this morning when he was talking about the Prime Minister being in hospital. And he was saying, and I quote, "He is, of course, our nation's leader. We're all rooting for him. We want him to come through this because we want him back, fit and healthy, leading the fight against this awful, awful virus." That was quite a moving and magnanimous thing to say from Jonathan Ashworth. And I think that is the kind of mood the country is now in. We will get normal party politics. They will resume. But right now, while we're all facing this virus, we're all facing the common enemy, I think we can expect a different tone from our politics.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James.